The contents of this podcast episode may be triggering and emotionally challenging to some audiences due to a discussion around suicide, self-harm, depression, and/or a reference to other mental health disorders. Continue at your own discretion. Welcome to the To Be Honest podcast. Today, I'm chatting with Paola Avalos, a 22-year-old business student at San Jose State University, who is sharing a bit today about her experience with depression, the stigma around mental health within the Mexican-American culture, and how finding friends in college made a difference in her life. So welcome to the podcast, Paola.
Hi, thank you.
Before we start, I like to ask every guest, to be honest, how are you doing today?
Today, actually, I got the most sleep I've gotten all summer, so I feel well-rested, and that's great because I slept like 10 hours. It was nice. Amazing, well-needed right before the start of the semester.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, sleep is so important. I think sometimes, I mean, I sleep a lot in general, I think, for an average person, but still, like, the days where I don't get sleep, I'm like, wow, this really impacts my daily life.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm glad you got some much needed rest, especially before the school year. So yeah, I want to start today by talking a bit about your background and first your experience with mental health and depression. So I wanted to know, when did you first think you might be depressed?
I started feeling like really sad sometime around right after sixth grade, like during summer. And I thought it was just sadness that you get like a regular person. But as time went on and it wouldn't leave me, I started thinking maybe there's something that I'm not sure about. And like, I never knew anything about mental illnesses, just because that was very taboo to talk about within not just like my own family, but the culture itself as well. So I think I remember there was this quiz going around during my seventh grade year that it was supposed to measure how depressed you are, and people were posting just like their results, and so I wanted to try it out, and I ended up getting 100%, and I was just like, maybe there's something going on that I don't know. And I guess over time it just kept getting worse from then on. So from when I was 12 until it became more into this isn't just depression, I'm also suicidal and I don't want to be here anymore. And I didn't get diagnosed actually until I was 13, but it did start out when I was 12.
Okay. It sounds like it was like a slow progression of like how it kind of came to be within your mind, I guess. Do you feel like there's anything that kind of brought it on, or do you think it was just like, just kind of how things were, you know, for you?
So there was something that happened when I was around 11 that was around the friends that I had at the time. It was like a he says, she says situation, mm-hmm. where people were kind of had to choose between my side or this other person's side. And I had, right after that situation happened, I went on a trip with my family to LA. So I was gone for like 4 days. But throughout that time, that other person was able to spread their story around like our group of friends and just within that culture in the apartment complex that I was in. So by the time I came back, it was their story was true and not mine. Mm-hmm. And so I was made to seem like the bad guy in all of it. And I was just like, nobody's parents would allow me to play with their kids anymore. I kind of lost a lot of friends. And eventually that other person began to kind of bully me in a sense. Mm-hmm. So I eventually stopped leaving my house and staying at home and just in bed or anywhere within my home. And I lived in a one bedroom apartment with a family of five. So it's being in there, you have no privacy. Yeah. And the only place you have privacy may be in your own bed under your sheets. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of pulled myself in for months when I used to go out every day from morning till dusk.
Yeah, I'm curious. So when you did start to kind of isolate yourself, did your family or anyone like notice anything changing? And if so, how did they react?
At the time that it was happening, I didn't think anybody noticed because I wasn't even really noticing, except for the fact that I was just like, oh, I don't want to go outside anymore. I'm just tired. I didn't know that I was running away from my fears rather than I thought it was just, oh, I'm just tired now. I'm growing up. I'm becoming like a teenager, even though I was only 12 at the time.
Yeah.
And I think my own two older sisters also believed that I was starting to just turn into a teenager since I was 12 and just going into that rebellious phase. Whereas I didn't find out until later, going into like kind of like a family therapy, that my parents noticed it from when it started, but they never spoke to me. They spoke with themselves about the situation, but nothing was ever said to me until years later. So at the time, I didn't notice that anybody else noticed, but they did notice it, and they kind of had their own reasonings behind it, and they thought it was like a phase, and I would get over it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At what point did you decide to seek like external assistance for your mental health?
So a lot of my mental health is tied to school and academics. So if I'm struggling in school, then I'm struggling mentally and vice versa. So it was during my eighth grade year when we had like a big exam coming up, and it was just kind of like all my classes had big assignments coming up, and it felt like a breaking point for me. Mm-hmm. So like one night, I was somewhere beginning of 2014 where I just decided, okay, this is too much for me to handle. I felt like the only way for me to get through it was to just end things. And so I decided, okay, tonight I'm going to do it. I ended up grabbing, like we had these a big bottle of like what that you get from Costco with like hundreds of ibuprofen pills in there. I grabbed that big bottle and like a bottle of water, and I locked myself in the bathroom. And as I was like getting ready to do it, I had a whole breakdown. And so, like I said, it was a small apartment. So my family heard me very quickly, and I couldn't breathe. I couldn't like tell them like what's going on. And so they were just pounding on the door thinking that I was like dying somehow. And eventually I opened the door and they saw me with like the pills and the water. And my dad, he's like a boomer. He knew what was happening, but he didn't comprehend why I was doing that. And my sister, the other one that was there, she was also confused because she had never felt that way before. And I'm so glad that she has never had to feel that way. But I was just like crying and telling them, I want to kill myself. Like, I don't want to be here anymore. I can't do this. Like I've been trying and I can't. And so they took the stuff from me and they were trying to calm me down and talk to me. And eventually my mom ended up, because my mom worked until like late at night. So when she came home, they kind of were talking, I guess my parents, and they decided that they were going to get help for me. I didn't know that there was help. I didn't know that what I was feeling could get help. I thought it was just like, this is how I'm going to be for the rest of my life. And I can't deal with feeling this way anymore. That night, my mom told me, oh, don't worry, tomorrow we're going to get help for you. Just go to sleep, get some rest. So I went to sleep. And the next morning, my mom called. I don't know who was the one that told her about this, but she called, I think, 211, like the non-emergency line. And she told them like, oh, my daughter tried to kill herself last night. I need some help because I don't know what to do. And they sent over a professional who came to like evaluate me and see if I was okay to be left there or if I needed to be put into like a psychiatric facility. And based off this assessment, they put me on a 5150 hold. And I was taken in an ambulance to this facility where they were waiting until there was a bed available for me at like a mental hospital. So that was when like my whole journey with actually going into therapy and figuring all of this out started.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I know it's probably not super easy to talk about, you know, those moments in your past, but I think it's really, it's nice that you're so open and honest about it. I mean, that's the whole point of the podcast, but still, I know those moments are really tough to talk about. So thank you. When this all happened, it sounds like your parents were pretty receptive to the idea of like getting you help. So I'm curious, what were their feelings and emotions and thoughts towards this situation?
I still remember that day and like my dad's reaction specifically because of how negative it was. After they were able to get the stuff away from me, he ended up telling me, why would you ever do that? You're going to go to hell. You should never want to do that. You should know that if you try to kill yourself, you're going straight to hell. And just seeing how unholy it was, not understanding it from like a mental health point of view, but just religiously. And my dad has always been religious growing up. So I knew that he wouldn't understand. And I was getting angry back at him. Like, why are you going to throw religion in my face? And I don't care about anything at this point. I don't know who it was that was able to calm him down. Might have been my mom. She's the one that's usually able to get through to him. That she kind of told him, like, besides your belief, your daughter's going through a crisis at this point. It doesn't matter how you feel. It's about how we can help her feel better. Thankfully, my mom, there's a big age gap between my parents of 13 years. So my mom being the younger one, she has been a bit more modern. And she understands mental health a lot better than he does, even to this day. So she was able to kind of talk him down and get him to not spout his own beliefs onto me when I was going through that crisis. Still to this day, my dad doesn't necessarily believe too much in mental illnesses. I think he sees them, if anything, as a phase. But he, by the way he shows his support, is not saying anything and just keeping it to himself, which I appreciate, because it's like talking to a brick wall in that sense. So my mom has thankfully been the person that has been always listening and tell me what we need to do, and we'll figure out a way to do it. Even if we don't have it, like the financial means, I'll find out how I can get the help for you. And I've been so lucky in that sense that even when she never understood it, she still took my word for it and made sure I got what I needed.
That's amazing to have that kind of support when you're going through a crisis like that. And just in general, having people like that in your family is so, so amazing. I'm really glad you had that. Do you think that your dad's perception of mental health has a connection to your culture? And like, what's the relationship there?
Yeah, absolutely. Because after I was released from the hospital and like, went back home, I don't know how, it probably was my mom that was just talking to a friend there that said, oh, my daughter is there. But it got around that I was in like a crazy place for crazy people. And so people started treating me differently. I was still getting like shunned, but they kind of saw me as somebody that was crazy now, and that's somebody that could snap at any moment. And so like, because a lot of that apartment complex was Hispanic, Latino. So that culture was also within my family. And my dad, I guess for them, they kind of went with that. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. So if he can't see you physically in pain, then you're not in pain. So that just came from how he was raised, where they can tell you whatever they want. That shouldn't affect you. Because you should know who you are. Mental pain is nowhere near physical pain. And I feel bad that he had to have gone through that. He had to live through that. And he never got to really deal with his own emotions. That it makes it harder for him now at his age to really comprehend and understand how he feels. But like within the culture itself, this more distant relatives, when they heard the news, would call me and try to preach to me with religion and just saying, you know, you need to pray, you need to go to church more, you gotta be closer to God and he'll heal you. Just kind of like, this is a sickness that was out of my control and all in God's hands. And as long as I pray to him, I'll be okay. After receiving those calls, I was just like, I know that the support that I need, while they thought they were being helpful, they didn't understand it either. And I was not going to get the support I needed from within my family, that I had to seek outside support.
Based on kind of what you told me, what do you think should change within the Mexican/Mexican-American culture in regards to mental health?
The biggest thing to do is really educate yourself, because there's no way that you're going to be able to understand something unless you actually learn what it is, how it happened, and how you can better yourself from it. My family, thankfully, has been a part of this program in San Jose that's called Sunday Friends, and they help like lower income families. They have classes that educate them on like housing, how to open a savings account, like all of that. And I think having those programs and within those programs, having mental health, like teaching people on mental health, like how everything can revolve around it and bringing awareness to it will help ease that stigma. Because I, it wasn't until college where I actually started telling people, I have like depression and anxiety. Because before I would just pretend like I never had it and it wasn't a part of me. Like I just acted like it was a phase as well. And so being able to be more open and honest about your own diagnosis or diagnosis is just like the first step to also getting through that stigma. And it's, I don't even know how I got to that point, but I got here.
Yeah. I know that's kind of a tough question because it's kind of, I mean, there's so much that probably could be changed in general about the stigma around mental health, but then culturally it adds like another layer to things. So I think that's a good point of adding education, just opportunities to expose people to like what mental health really is. For someone who is kind of in your position, who has or is experiencing maybe mental health challenges and is in a family that doesn't quite understand what's going on, what advice would you give to them to help their family understand help their family to understand what they're going through?
I think it's really important for you to understand yourself before you can have other people understand you. I wanted people to understand what I was going through when I didn't even understand what I was going through. And having to do that really deep inner soul searching to see, why do I feel this way? Why is this affecting me that way? And understanding who you are before you can expect other people to understand what's going on with you. Because for years I had this anger and resentment towards like one of my sisters because she didn't understand, but I wasn't communicating with her and I wasn't even trying to understand myself. So how am I going to expect other people to understand me when I'm not taking that time and putting in that effort to understand myself? Mm-hmm. It was not fun at all. And having to do all of these different videos, reading different things to see, why do I feel this way? Why is it so hard for me to get up from bed? Why is it so hard for me to get in the shower? Having to really dig deep and see, oh, this is why. Oh, it's because I feel so tired. No, but it's not just because you feel so tired. There's something underlying that tiredness. You just have to be real with yourself.
Once your family understood what you're going through, did they support you in other ways? I know you mentioned like your dad kind of stays quiet now. Did you have like extra support from like your sisters and your mom after that?
Thankfully, one of my sisters, I let most of my anger out on her, that I had like my sadness turn into anger. I would lash out on her, especially during like my teen years, but she kind of always stuck by and understood that it wasn't anger speaking. It was just sadness coming out in the wrong way. I was super lucky to have somebody that understood and stuck by me and all of that. So she thankfully can kind of pick up when something's going on with me, like if I'm being too quiet or if I'm being extra mean that day, she'll kind of say like, oh, there's something going on, because she can tell when there's a difference between like when I'm feeling normal, mm-hmm. or so, and when my depression is a little higher than I can manage. There's that. And also my mom, while I may not notice, my mom is very observant, and she can also pick up my behaviors and kind of see the differences as to when I'm okay and when I'm not okay. And also trying to think like, oh, do you want to go out? Do you want to go to the store real quick? Trying to get me out of my mind. And break through like my thoughts. because sometimes I won't even notice that I'm going through something, but they'll pick up because they'll see small things that I may not have noticed. Like my sister recently has pushed me to get back into therapy. I had been struggling for like the past couple of months, and I was just kind of avoiding it and pushing it back because I was like, oh my God, starting therapy all over again, having to get reacquainted with a therapist, telling her my whole life story, all of my trauma, so that she can help me better understand and combat this. Like, that's a lot of work, and I do not have the energy to put that much effort into myself right now. So after telling my sister I was having like a breakdown, like I am not okay again, and I think I might need some help. I just don't have the effort or the energy and motivation to do it myself. She came over and was like, get on the phone, call the clinic, and you're going to set up an appointment. And she would not leave me. She would not stop bothering me until I did it. And that's just how she helped me out, by just being really bossy and telling me what to do. Because if not, I just won't do it.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing to have people like that in your corner to support you. I think that's really, it's beautiful in a way. Like you can be yourself, and they know that sometimes there may be moments where it's maybe not you who's, you know, saying those things. It's not out of like, you know, it's not your personality, but they can understand like, oh, it's maybe, you know, having a mental health day. And yeah, maybe it's just like your mental health, you know, speaking for you sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. I also, so it sounds like you're going back to therapy. What else have you done to manage your mental health?
I recently actually started pushing myself out of my comfort zone, because all the time, my anxiety is like, don't do it. Don't do anything that is going to be even a little bit hard. Stay in your lane. And I have been listening to that voice for the longest time, until last year when I first decided to like get out of my comfort zone by trying to join a sorority and make friends that way, because I was tired of not having any friends. And I was like, I need some friends. I need to feel like I belong in San Jose State, because I didn't for so long because I didn't have friends. And that's how it started. And from there, I was just like, I'm going to do more things, because that went well. And so I was invited to do like a speech at a small event with a program that I had been involved in since high school. And everything in me was telling me, don't do it. You do not want to go up and talk in front of people. That's horrifying. Do not. But I was just like, I'm going to do it. I will go up on that stage and speak. And I did follow through with it. While even though everything in me was just fighting it, I ended up going up and did it. And it was amazing. It was the first speech I had given besides like in school. And I felt like so alive. And I felt like, oh my God, I can do so much. I'm stronger than I thought I was, because I stopped listening to my anxiety and telling me that I'm not capable of doing it. And it's just really understanding and being able to tell the difference between who is talking, like if it's your anxiety or depression, or you that's actually talking. Because if I had listened to my anxiety or continued to listen to my anxiety, I would be in a very different place right now. And I don't even like, who even knows who she could have been. But thankfully, going out of my comfort zone is actually making me so much stronger, better. Like even reaching out to talk to you, I was just like, maybe I shouldn't. But then I was like, no, you have been wanting to talk more and be more public and open about mental health. This is a chance for you to be able to do so. And that's also how I'm here.
That's awesome. Well, I mean, congrats to you for having the courage to do public speaking. I know for me, that's also a fear of mine. So I think I need some of your confidence the next time someone approaches me about that. But seriously, that's so cool. And I'd love to hear more about your experience with growing your support network through your sorority. So I know the media sometimes gives sororities and fraternities like a bad rap, but I'd love to hear from your perspective, like what it's been like to be in a sorority and how you found friendships within that.
Being a sorority is, well, at least this sorority, I know there's some sororities that it's not the same. Everybody has their own experiences. However, it's a lot of work, and that work has really teaches you and helps you grow, because it's not just a place where you get to hang out and have fun. It's a place where you're putting in that work and that effort to grow yourself, as well as helping keep that sorority alive. I first, like, meeting people, I was just like, everybody's so nice, but I didn't feel like I related to anyone. But it wasn't until I kept going and actually having these deep conversations with people that I realized we're so alike and so different at the same time. And we have so many similar experiences, but we've been able to deal with them in so many different ways. That's just really beautiful, seeing how different we are from one another. And I have gotten really close to people that I would have probably never approached in real life because I was either too intimidated, or I was like, they seem out of my like friend league. So I would have been like, maybe not. I'll just stay in my lane once again. But it wasn't just about making friends, but also, like I said, building my network, because through the sorority I was actually also able to get my internship that I just finished this summer. But I was able to learn more about what it is to be in HR, since HR was such a like interest for me, and I had a past internship in HR. I would have never even known about this opportunity if it wasn't for somebody in the sorority that I had reached out to, and they told me, oh yeah, there's an opening at my company if you want to apply. And it really has helped me expand my networking and help teach me, because I have to recruit and you have to go up to complete strangers and just, hey, do you want to join my sorority? Have you ever thought about being in a sorority? And a lot of times you're getting rejected and shot down. And I've always had a big fear of rejection. So it's having to constantly face your fears and face that rejection 9 out of 10 times people will say no to you. It makes you grow a thicker skin. So while there are a lot of fun parts, there's also a lot of hard parts of being in it. And honestly, it has made me become a much more outspoken person and so much stronger. I'm an emotional person, but I feel like I've gotten better at being able to speak through my emotions and trying to speak clearly and at least professionally as I can without letting my emotions speak for me.
Yeah. That's so cool. Yeah. It sounds like such a positive experience. So I'm curious how your sorority and your friends in general that you've made have helped you and supported you with your mental health specifically.
Before meeting them, I have had other friends where, not all of friends were like this, but some friends where they didn't feel comfortable with me talking about my mental illnesses or really mental health. And if I try to bring it up, they would kind of like give each other a look, kind of just like, is she really going to talk about this? Or I thought she got over it. And so I never felt comfortable enough to really speak about that with a lot of people. And that's part of the reason why I never really told anybody until going into college, like what I was going through. And these people that I have met now, they provide that space for me where, do you want to talk about what you're going through? If you don't, that's perfectly fine. We could just sit in silence. We can go and as deep as you want. You can tell us as much as you want. We'll be here to listen. And just giving me that space and not having any like judgment and letting me have a voice just to speak however small something may be or however big it may be. If it's affecting me, they're there and they're willing to listen. And they have absolutely no stigma against it. If they don't understand it, they're very much open to you explaining and and teaching it to them. And that's just great that everybody has such an open mind and they're willing to learn and willing to sit through the uncomfortableness that can come from speaking about this. And that's just something I had never experienced really with a group of people until joining a sorority, as weird as it kind of sounds saying that.
No, not at all. I mean, it sounds like you definitely found your people, which is amazing. I think it sounds like you've made lifelong friends that are going to be there for you, you know, in the good times and the bad times. So that, I think that's pretty incredible. For those who are interested in joining like a sorority or a social club of any sort, but maybe hesitant to do so, what would you tell them?
Honestly, just go for it. I didn't let myself really think too much about it because I know I overthink. So I was just like, either I'm doing it or not. And I agreed at that moment, yes, I'm going to do it. So I didn't let myself think about it any longer and try to talk myself out of it. And I don't know if it's around all campuses to do it, but there's like recruitment events. That's the perfect time to go to as many Greek organizations and just kind of see which is the right fit for you. If maybe this, maybe Greek life actually isn't for you, but you were always interested in it, this is the perfect time to, during those events, talk to them and see, are these my people? Do they understand me? Could I see myself being still connected to them 5 years from now? And just, it's kind of like a dating when you're going to those events, seeing, okay, do I actually want to get into a relationship with you? Or is this going to have to be a no? And just at least being able to go to one of those events and to be able to say, oh no, it wasn't for me. Or actually, I'm more interested than I thought I would be. Kind of just so that you're not always thinking, what if I had actually gone to an event? Or what if I had joined? You won't have that regret or that thought if you go to at least one event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great advice. Yeah, live with no regrets. Just go for what you want. And yeah, find the right fit for you. I think those are all great points. So yeah, thank you so much, Paola, for being on the podcast. I had such a good time talking to you and getting to know your story and your experience a little bit more. If people want to learn more about you or all the things that you're up to, where can they go?
I'm on Instagram. My Instagram handle is paola.frita. Frita is just based off of my love for French fries and papas fritas in Spanish. But yeah, that's me.
Perfect. Well, thank you again. I hope we can connect in the future and stay, you know, keep each other updated on everything. But until then, I hope you stay well.
Thank you so much. I love being here.
Yeah, thank you. All right, bye.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning into the To Be Honest podcast, brought to you by Momentum for Health. We're so happy to be able to share the personal behavioral health and wellness stories of youth and young adults in Santa Clara County. If you live in Santa Clara County and are in need of behavioral health assistance, please call 800-704-0900. You can also reach the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline 24/7 by dialing or texting 988. That's it for now, but we'll be back in just 2 weeks with another episode. Bye!